Welcome to the Guffman.
I'm Alex, and with me again is James.
Irish.
Yo, Irish. I'm so sorry.
I'm going by Irish now.
Before we get started, I wanted to make sure you check out our website, themcguffman.com. We've put out a lot of content recently. Our last podcast was about Purple Rain. Josh joined us for that. It's a podcast about Purple Rain, so
nothing more needs to be said.
Exactly. And James and I, before that, we did a mini-sode on the current season of SNL, the cast changeover, and our last full episode before that was on Gravity. And yeah, we've got a couple interesting podcasts coming up in the future as well. We're going to do a mini-sode on Bad Grandpa and a full episode on the Kings of Summer next week. So it'll be a week of mischief. But yeah, that's what's coming up. But what's today is more important. So let's get right to it.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
All right, James. Oh, sorry, Irish. What are we talking about today?
Say it like a Somalian. Well, if you didn't get from those hints, we are talking about a movie I didn't find very silly at all.
No.
Captain Phillips.
Yeah. It's a pretty serious film, I think.
Yes, it's
I don't know if there's one laugh in this film.
I don't know if there is either. Yeah. Not that I can think of. It's
not that Paul Greengrass, the director, is typically known for directing his romps, you know. Not,
right, but yeah. Tom Hanks is kind of funny.
Yeah.
And but no, this is a hostage movie, a pirate, modern pirate movie. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's not too much fun to go around. And yeah, from the get-go, it's pretty dark with the impending sense of doom. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
it never really lets up.
Yeah. Well, shall we just both talk about our favorite part, our obvious favorite part of the movie right off the bat, being the first scene and all of the dialogue in the first scene about how the world is changing? How worried were you for the rest of the movie during that scene?
Yeah, very worried about his son. About his son. It was different.
I mean, sometimes he skips school, you know?
Yeah, when Rich was coming up, things were different. You kept your head down, you did your work.
And you can make captain in no time.
Yeah, now there's 50 guys going for every job.
Yeah, but like...
Can we just see how much dialogue we remembered for an episode?
I mean...
I saw this movie once, and I'm impressed I got that far with
it. Yeah, it's already a shocking amount that we have remembered.
Yeah.
But no, because I was watching this movie the first time I saw it, and I don't remember if we've talked about in the podcast about Greengrass or Green Zone specifically at all, but the script for Green Zone, Paul Greengrass's previous film, is very blatant. It's not very subtle. And the first scene of this movie, all of the things I hated about Green Zone popped up in it. And yeah. I was just very concerned. But I loved Captain Phillips. I really enjoyed it. How did you feel about it?
I liked it. I liked it less than you do now that I've heard your opinion of it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
I'm going to say... maybe 15 minutes too long, which is not something I normally say about movies.
Okay.
Tom Hanks didn't blow me away. I mean, people are saying Oscar stuff for him. I don't see that at all in what was on the screen. And I'm someone who likes Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of cool stuff. I mean, I love like hostage movies, like Dog Day Afternoon and stuff like that. I love just kind of those social situations that get so insane and like no one's really in charge and one person does one thing and it changes so much. Like I like that. Like I like bank robbery, heisty, yeah, panic room stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The situations I thought, you know, were good. This movie had a lot that I really did like about it. I wasn't really blown away, but I'm glad I saw it and I'd recommend it to people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not really esoteric of just things that I only like, but it was good. And I like I did like the kind of when it got really heavily military near the end. I thought all that stuff is really cool to see kind of the inner workings of how those decisions go and those situations go down, and we'll probably talk more about it. But I loved the scene of him of Captain Phillips with the Navy medic at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Like, honestly, probably one or two favorite scenes of this whole movie was that. And it was pretty brief and just really real. And I'm not saying that from someone who's been in a situation anywhere close to anything that's shown in this movie. But I love that we get, you know, those moments. There's these big moments in life and in news and movies and things like that. I love seeing kind of what happens after that, like not the money shot, but kind of like the come down from that. And mm-hmm. I thought this scene was kind of one of the best of that idea of like just kind of the minutia of things. Like now we've gone, you know, we're past the headline, whatever. How do you transition from like this insane experience to kind of getting back into normal life? And I mean, that kind of pervades throughout the movie a little bit, but I thought the ending was just fantastic with that. So that, I thought it left me on a really good note because I liked that. And I really liked the scene of the Somalis just going out onto the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that those were like, I think my two favorite scenes.
You mean where they actually first get on the Alabama?
No, when still on the beach and they're picking their crews and stuff.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Those I think were really my favorite parts. And that wasn't, I think what a lot of people are saying they really liked about this movie, and it wasn't Tom Hanks centric. I guess one of those scenes kind of was. So definitely some cool things that I hadn't really seen. I kind of knew Paul Greengrass's style going into this, but yeah, I was pleased with it. I certainly don't regret seeing this movie. It's probably an 8 for me out of 10.
Yeah. I agree with what you said for the most part. And I think definitely the best scene is the last scene. And anytime a movie does that successfully, I think, it will always make your movie so much better than even just like having your second best scene last. Like, and this, most movies I find have the problem of ending a bit too late. And I know you said you felt like this movie was too long, which is not a view I share, but, it certainly didn't have any extra scenes that it at the end that it didn't need. Like that they never show him actually reunite with his wife, I thought was an amazing choice that doesn't happen very often.
Right. And that's a, you know, 6 minutes that would do absolutely nothing for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's much more like, and I found the scene with him and the medic, I found it like pretty moving. Like I thought it was this really, really great scene. And the interaction between the two of them, and I feel like the movie really came full circle in that scene. And just in general, I felt the movie really, I mean, we've already talked about how I feel like the first scene is by far the worst part of this film.
Yeah.
And it really, to me, built all throughout, like for a pretty steady line, I think each successive scene I liked slightly more than the one before it. There are some parts like I certainly liked better towards the beginning than, you know, stuff in the middle. But for the most part, I think more than most movies, this had a real solid build to it. And for an action movie or, you know, a drama with action, whatever you want to qualify this movie as, I think that's a really, really good way to get me very into your movie, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And for a movie with, you know, hostage scenes, you know, the SEAL Team 6 showing up, for your most powerful scene to really be kind of a one-on-one with kind of, I don't want to call it vacant dialogue, but, you know, not telling the story of how your wife died. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, it's a medical checkup.
Exactly. It's very utilitarian dialogue for what needs to get
absolutely.
Done.
Yeah, absolutely. Utilitarian is the perfect word for it. And for that scene to be as powerful as it was, really, really made this movie for me, probably more than any other thing I can point to.
Yeah, I believe that medic is not an actress.
No, they got one of the, what was it, USS, something with a T, Trumbull or Tuxton or something.
Yeah.
But she was just happened to be the crew that would be her job if she was at work and this happened. Mm-hmm. And they didn't script anything. They said, treat this person as you would a patient who had just gone through this. And, you know, she's got that thing where she's, you know, that nurses and doctors sometimes have where they're really cold and stone-faced about it, but doing exactly what they need to do. Like, it seems really cold and impersonal, but it's, they're just attaining the perfect amount of information they need. Like, she's asking him, is all this blood yours? Like, just kind of getting him into this, making sure his brain is functioning, that he's actually there. And it's a really weird scene. It's a really uncomfortable because he's gone through all this trauma, mm-hmm. and like, he has his blood and blood of people who had just been aiming guns at him for, you know, days, literally. Yes. Incredibly weird scene, but completely effective. And she was very, very good, especially for a non-actress. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that scene, that probably bumped this movie up like a whole point for me because it was so late in the movie and because I thought it was just done so well. And
it's a scene that we just don't see.
Absolutely. It's, we kind of always get that early scene of him transitioning. You know, we get his normal life, and then things escalate. And now he's in this crazy scene that, you know, would necessitate an entertaining film. But we really don't get that, you know, that denouement, the kind of coming down from it, other than, oh, he's back with his family, everything's fine. But it was fascinating to see that other stuff of, you know, there is something that happens between him getting off the boat and him meeting his family. And we never see, or we very rarely see that. And I thought that was just such a novel and well done scene that it, you know, as I said, it really did a lot for my appreciation of this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about, we haven't talked about the actual Somali characters in the film. Did you like Musa? I thought he, like, the guy playing Musa, Barkhad Abdi, gave a really good performance. I thought he was, like, weirdly, like, terrifying and likable. And I found it, I don't know, I was surprised by how good I thought he was.
Yeah. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah.
I loved him in this.
Yeah.
And, didn't expect to. I didn't really know what to expect from this movie. Like, I kind of had a vague sense. And again, Paul Greengrass, I kind of thought knew what I was getting into.
Mm-hmm.
No, I thought he was so good. And yeah, to actually have any amount of sympathy for him by the end of this movie, I don't think it comes out in the dialogue. I think it absolutely comes out in his performance. Like, I think it's purely the execution of what he was given that makes this character multi-dimensional at all.
Exactly.
I thought he was so good. I thought the rest of the people in his crew were really good.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought he was absolutely a standout for this. And I hadn't heard that going into the movie, and then just kind of reading reviews and stuff after, a lot of people are giving him a lot of credit. And I'm so happy that I didn't know that going into it. But just, you know, purely knowing nothing about him, again, not even being an actor,
mm-hmm.
Just kind of was one of the people in a casting call from Little Somalia in the States.
Yeah.
No, I thought he was so good. The scene, as I said, on the beach when they're just putting together their crew, right away I thought, you know, there's something about this guy. Like, there's something just below the surface that's making this performance really good. And it honestly just got better and better. And you know, he brought a sense of calmness to these insane situations. You know, when he says, "I'm the captain now," there's this menace to him, and his back and forth with Tom Hanks, and especially when they're on the lifeboat, I thought you really got a great performance out of this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I was saying earlier, and this is one of the scenes I loved in this movie, and particularly loved his performance, is when he says, I'm the captain now. Like, that whole scene is like really intense and very frightening, but he's already been sympathetic to you. Like, there's something really likable about him on that scene on the beach. Despite the fact that we know very little about his character and never really find out all that much, all things considered. But that, you know, he's sympathetic and then terrifying, and then goes back to sympathetic without really that much changing, I think is amazing. And yeah, I desperately want to see this guy in more movies.
I thought he was so, so good. Mm-hmm. And again, people are saying that now, and I'm so glad I didn't have kind of an opinion built up for him or have that tainted or anything. Yeah. And just was such a standout in this movie for me. And you know, Tom Hanks was fine. I didn't feel he heard it, but as far as the performance that I took away from this movie, it was him by, you know, leaps and bounds.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the whole thing with Tom Hanks typically is, you know, I don't think he's a great actor. I think he's an extremely charismatic guy. And some people will confuse that for great acting. I think the scenes in this movie, though, you know, I think he's generally good, but the scenes where he has to knock it out of the park, I think he absolutely does. And those scenes also happen to be kind of showier scenes that people that like acting would kind of go nuts for in general. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because, you know, they're the scenes where he actually gets to emote a lot more, you know?
Yeah. What did you think of their relationship between, I guess we'll say Muse?
Yeah, it seems to alternate the pronunciation in the movie. Yeah. But
yeah, it's usually polysyllabic, so I'll just say Muse, even though I always read Muse when I read the subtitles.
Yeah, let's not talk about British rock bands.
But what did you think of them, and especially when it kind of was escalating and climaxing when he said, "You're not just a fisherman," when they were on the boat. What did you think of kind of them, their relationship throughout the movie, and kind of what maybe was sort of the point of their relationship, or maybe one of the points of the movie when we get that line of them on the lifeboat?
Well, that "you're not just a fisherman" line is obviously pretty important to the movie, even just in the fact that Captain Phillips says it two times. But their relationship is interesting because, I mean, they're both captains of their separate ships and the leaders of their separate crews. And, I mean, right from the get-go, we see Captain Phillips meeting his crew, and we also see Muse choosing his crew. And right there already is more character development than I expected to get from the Somali side on this in this film.
Right.
And that was exciting and surprising, and I think absolutely the right choice. And I think they're sort of like built up right next to each other, like seeing their ship, or sorry, building their crew in Muse's case, and just sort of the way they lead over their crew leading up to the lifeboat. It's just, it's very similar, but just sort of with totally different goals. And, but the key goal kind of staying the same. I don't know. It was fascinating in ways I clearly can't really break down, but, I think there is sort of, I don't want to say respect. I feel like respect is going too far. I don't know that Captain Phillips respects Muse. Maybe the other way around, I could see it with the way that the movie's been working. But I don't know. There's something that causes Muse to give up when Captain Phillips says, "You're not just a fisherman." You know what I mean?
Right.
And I don't think the movie spells it out. I think it's just sort of, I don't know. Yeah, what are your thoughts? Because I'm clearly not doing anything good.
Well, I thought it was a really a good choice that... Okay, I forget his name. Bilal's the younger one, right?
I thought he was, but then I read something that seemed like he was the angrier one, like the Wangro of the crew. I don't know. I can't remember.
Okay, so the bigger the guy, he's, you know, when he says he wants a strong guy, and that guy who's more of the loose cannon on Muse's crew.
Yeah.
So when they first approached the Maersk Alabama and just start taking shots at it. Mm-hmm. That was Musa. Like, that's him shooting, just completely willing.
Yeah, yeah.
He sees someone and just shoots. And I thought, you know, looking back on this movie, I was thinking, was that not maybe the crazier guy? Because that's, as we see throughout the movie, he's more willing to kill people, you know.
Yeah, that is Bilal. Sorry, I looked it up. But
okay.
Yeah.
So I thought, thinking back, I was like, was that Bilal? And I'm like, no, that was definitely Musa. So we know right away, even before he knows who he's dealing with, anything about these people, Muse is willing to kill. Like, he's firing at people hoping to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that about him, that he's willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then as he speaks with Captain Phillips, you know, he makes that threat. He's going to kill one person. Bilal's going to be the one to do it. And he's got a gun to his head. And this doesn't look like a bluff at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like his communication, as brief as it is at that point, with Captain Phillips is what prevents that person from being killed.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I it's tough because I don't think it's respect, but I think it's just some kind of empathy, some understanding that they are both in something of the same position. Yeah. And, you know, the way he tries to communicate with Hufan, was his name?
I'm not sure.
Kind of the leader.
Okay.
On the near the end. Yeah, there's some mutual understanding between the two of them that this situation is, you know, not what either of them want to be in, mm-hmm. you know, as much as Muse clearly has volunteered for this in a way. But that's, you know, not a situation they necessarily want to be in, and maybe we can both achieve our goals with some, you know, without terrible things happening for both of us.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it is a very interesting dynamic that the two of them have. And I think it is a weird situation to watch, and I'm glad it never really got too spelled out.
Yes.
And too, like, there's not that moment where they both do the exact same thing with their crew or anything, you know?
Yeah.
And I can see what the attraction to do that would be, but I'm glad it never happens, and I'm glad it's not spelled out too much. And I think, you know, you see parallels between the way they treat their crew and the way they do their job, but there is some sharp distinction between the two of them. And again, the stuff he does on the lifeboat, Musa, or the, you know, or the actor, I think that's where we start to see a really sharp distinction between the two, in that there is something fundamentally different about these people because of how they were raised and the situation that they found themselves in. And, you know, maybe they could be, you know, in each other's shoes under different circumstances, but it's never made that clear and kind of shoved down your throat, like, oh, these pirates are just good people with a bad situation, and isn't American politics shitty?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm really glad that wasn't there. And I know Paul Greengrass is not one to shy away from politics or say something negative about American foreign policy or American government. But I'm glad there was a lot of space there, and I'm glad there was kind of some free play, and that, you know, this guy had a bit of free reign of his character. And, you know, he definitely has a specific end that's going to come to him just because it's defined that way by the script. But I thought it was never really super clear, and I don't mean that as a complaint at all. Like,
yeah.
I think it's such a crazy situation with so many moving parts and so many different factors that it was kind of nice to see that with a kind of a bit more wiggle room to it.
Yeah, for sure. And that sort of leads into something that I want to talk to you about this with this movie is, because I feel like this movie has a very sort of like human message at the end, but I think at the core of the movie, I think it's about leadership. And the leader that sort of wavers the most, Muse, loses. And I'm including basically every leader that we see throughout the movie, like Captain Phillips, even just as a father and a husband, and then Captain Phillips on as the captain of his ship, and then, you know, the SEAL captain, and Castellano, he's just the ship's captain before the SEALs come in. Like, all of these like leaders throughout the movie, those that never really break are the ones that win. And Muse is sort of the one that he kind of gives up at the end. And I found that interesting about the movie. And yeah, I think the whole movie is about strong leadership, almost to the point where it's almost a little authoritarian, kind of. But if they didn't bring it back down with sort of that last scene with Phillips. But I thought that was kind of interesting that all throughout the movie we're just getting examples of leadership. Like, I feel like there's some sort of business manual that's going to use this movie as a as a prime example at some point, you know. And I found that interesting. And I'm curious to know what you think that this movie's sort of position on leadership is, both in the situation and what you touched on with Greengrass, you know, being a former journalist and very, very interested in talking about current events, how you think that could sort of tie into a bigger point, you know?
Yeah, I see what you mean. And the one thing that I was thinking about as you're asking that is, Muse near the end seems to be going through the motions. Like he understands he's in this leadership role, but he does seem at some point defeated much before he, you know, is in handcuffs.
Yeah. He's still on, like, we see him look totally defeated on the lifeboat before he even steps off.
Yeah, and it's when kind of Hufan's not going to respond. They're not going to go back to the mothership and unload. And it becomes clear they're probably not going to make it to the Somali coastline. And he kind of has this sense of resignation about him, yet never surrendering. Like, no. It's...
Even when he's arrested, he's like... He's confused by what's happening. Like when they actually end up arresting him after Captain Phillips is safe, he's still waiting to kind of see the elders, you know?
Oh, yeah. And even on the boat, you know, before he gets tackled and cuffed and everything, even when he's still on the lifeboat, he kind of has the sense is when you see him communicate with Phillips that this is his role. And it's kind of around that same thing as the you're not just a fisherman. It's clear that he understands he is a leader and he does know. Maybe not know more, but is more capable than a lot of the other people from his community that he came from. Mm-hmm. And he does kind of have this many leadership skills. You know, he has Bilal's very much a loose cannon, yet he seems to rein him in at a lot of times that it would have been difficult to. Mm-hmm. It does a lot for his crew. And again, even with someone who'd be kind of an enemy like Captain Phillips, gets kind of a working relationship with, like he's not just butting him over the head with his gun and telling him to lead him around the ship. Like they have something of a, you know, amicable relationship as they're being led around. Like he certainly could be a lot more awful to him, mm-hmm. given his complete control of the situation. Mm-hmm. So yeah, as far as what this movie says about leadership, I don't know, because I don't like the, that idea, as I said, that these people are just born in a horrible situation. They had no choice. And it's just kind of going through the motions until they're ultimately defeated by someone or some country that is more powerful than them. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, is maybe as bad as an answer as it is. I do like that there is some play there. I'm glad it's not spelled out. I know Greengrass does like to say some things and he's a very opinionated person and it comes out through his filmmaking, but I don't think that there is something really hard and fast to say about it. And it's kind of one of the things I really like about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I certainly don't think it, you know, puts its foot down and, you know, then stays, makes a statement, you know, but I do feel like there are things there that are kind of talking points for it. Like, there's that moment where they're on the lifeboat where Captain Phillips finds out that the Muse is a fisherman, and is explaining that his ship was bringing food, to countries like Somalia. And, Muse says, something along the lines of, yeah, well, you wouldn't need to bring us food if, you know, your giant ships hadn't come and caught up all our fish and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, I thought that was kind of interesting, and I feel like that sort of it ties into it a bit, you know, and just sort of to think about these decisions that are made because of previous decisions and the way all those things tie together, I thought was kind of interesting. Even just the fact that there's no fish because of them, and that's why they're bringing food back, you know? And one thing that we haven't even mentioned, I don't think, is the cat that that Muse and his crew are chewing on throughout the film. And
K-H-A-T.
Yeah, K-H-A-T. It's like a mild amphetamine, I believe.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, and another thing that this movie doesn't spell out for you is what that is. And I love that. They never tell you what it is. And I thought that was great. The crew is chewing on it the whole time. And, towards the end, they sort of run out, and that's when things sort of start to get really out of hand for the crew. And I sort of felt like, it was this really nice small thing for like when what you rely on, which is what the crew has been relying on this whole time, when that gets taken away from you, then things start to go bad and you have to sort of come up with alternative options, like piracy, you know, like when all the fish are gone, like you can't be a fisherman anymore. And I found that really interesting. And also the all of the discussions about how, you know, Musée has a boss as well. And even though he got something like a $3 million ship recently, like there's, you know, there's new, the bosses still need something today, you know?
Yeah.
And that ties into what Captain Phillips was saying at the beginning, which despite, you know, hating the scene, I feel like it's a very, very important scene for the movie, you know? And I thought that was kind of interesting, the sort of tying American corporate culture into the way that our Somalian characters have to operate. You know?
Yeah. Okay. So with Cat, or Cot, I'm not sure what we're going to go with.
I'm going with Cat.
Okay. So it does reinforce this idea that there are finite resources in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the, you know, with the bigger thing with the fish, that there are this many people and there's this much of what they want, and there's not enough for everybody forever. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of get this thing of finite resources, and, you know, if X amount over Y amount of people, it's just not going to work out. And this is what kind of forces people into this situation. What I was expecting from someone who is a lefty, the way that Paul Greengrass is, and an unapologetic one, was the scene at the start of the movie where Musée is, again, the one I liked, about him getting his crew together and getting out there. What that scene could have been very easily is, you know, a bunch of Somalian children fishing and not catching any fish, and then a shot of a big American fishing boat in the distance, and then No, but you know what I mean, like
that's what Ron Howard's Captain Phillips is.
Yeah, exactly. And it's you know, it drives the point home very clearly and sets off the action, which you want to do early in your script, and, you know, all sets up all the characters' motivations. We don't get that. We get something more like an asshole boss. We get someone who comes in and says, what have you done for me lately? Yeah, you've done this, but, you know, that was a week ago. You caught a boat last week. That's nothing. Like, you're still nothing to me. Do something. Do something.
Yeah.
We don't get that parallel on the American side either, though. We don't get Maersk bosses being a dick to him. What is interesting and that I didn't see coming is we get Captain Phillips doing that more than any other character in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Maersk sends out emails about, oh, here's this is where the attacks are. You know, stay off this coast. Warning, you know, piracy attacks in this area. Interestingly to me, the only time we get anything about commerce and economics and kind of corporate leadership and behavior in not abstract terms like we did with the Somalian, I don't know, warlord, whatever you want to call those guys, was Captain Phillips saying, this is your job, to get things from point A to point B as fast and as cheap as possible. Mm-hmm. And we get some union talk in there, and it came off as like that's like the harshest leader we see. And I don't mean harsh as in someone who's willing to, you know, tighten their belts and put in the hard work, but someone who is, you know, kind of aggressive and kind of rude to their staff in order to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something I did not expect at all from this movie. Like, yeah. it completely threw me off. And it didn't hurt the movie in any way, but it was really not what I was expecting.
I think the thing about that scene is that kind of, I mean, they're in the shit at that point. You know, like, this is after the, between the first and second attempts to board the ship by Musée and his crew.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like Captain Phillips is a much gruffer character than people sort of generally think just because Tom Hanks is playing him. But I sort of feel like that point is he's kind of up against a wall to an extent, and he doesn't have too many options that he could say. You know what I mean? And I think it's fine to say that. And I think there's also sort of he's got to remain an authority figure to these guys, you know? And that's a pretty quick way to remain an authority figure. And I'm not, you know, saying whether or not that's in this real life situation, whether or not that's the way one should act. I'm just sort of trying to figure out his motivations. And I feel like that's kind of how he sees it. He is the position of authority on the ship, and you know, the way he's come up in his job, he certainly values authority and feels it should be respected. And he wants to make sure he remains respected. And I feel like this is kind of the quickest way he could have done that. And as we see through the movie, when he's, you know, still in control, he's a very, he doesn't dilly-dally. His emails to his wife are 8 words long.
with one ellipses.
Yeah. And I think it's just sort of very much a part of the person that he is. And he's certainly not thinking, he's not actually thinking of the commercial aspects of them leaving the ship, you know, because they're afraid, you know?
Yeah, no, I see
what you're saying for sure. I'm just sort of offering a counterpoint.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, in these kind of panic situations, and as I said, I kind of like these movies where things are completely thrown into chaos and, you know, whether or not someone is there to, be the leader to get things out. I just thought it was interesting that it wasn't him saying, which I think you're trying to suggest, of him kind of just saying like, look, we're here, that's fine, like, you're right, you know whether or not things could be better or we could have set things up or maybe there should be a gun on board or whatever, but like, fuck that, this is the situation we're in now.
Yeah,
do what you need to do. When you get home, ask your boss about how you want to change the protocol, but like, you know, let's do this right now. Just for someone like Greengrass, who I know is interested in politics and kind of societal issues like this, for Captain Phillips, our protagonist, our hero, to be the one to really drive home this point about economics and really not in a sympathetic way, to be like, look, this is what we do. We do it fast. We do it cheap. I feel like in other kind of liberal movies, that's your asshole character. Like, that's the one who you want to see fail. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just maybe I'm just overanalyzing, but if you're looking for the the semi-politicized angle to this drama action movie, that it was just really surprising to see that come from the protagonist, as I said.
Okay, fair enough.
What did you think about the idea that if we did not get the translations of the Somali pirates?
Was that a thing that was discussed?
No, just a thing that I've thought about in the meantime. And in situations like this, when, you know, language barrier is obviously a big thing for these characters. And
yeah, absolutely.
In situations, sometimes there's nothing more terrifying than a lack of knowledge, like to be uncertain about what these people around you are so passionately screaming at each other. Like, that's got to be a terrible feeling. Again, I love the scenes in Somalia. I don't think this movie would benefit from having its audience, its non whatever language they're speaking. I'm sorry if that sounds insensitive. I just don't know what it is. If we didn't understand what they were saying in those scenes on the boat, how do you think that would have affected your appreciation of the movie?
I think if this movie, as we've seen it, the only change is we don't understand the Somali, I think it makes it a worse movie. I feel like it would have to, and I mean, there's just that scene that you love so much, the beach scene would just not exist.
Yeah.
In the movie you're talking about, I think it would make it a more sort of like harrowing action type of movie and a more generally terrifying kind of movie. I think they would just in general speak less if that was the case. Like the characters would be written to speak less. And I think all the other pieces in place, I think it'd still be a very good movie, but it would be a different kind of good movie. And I think it would be a worse movie than what we have. Although the point you are raising is definitely interesting, and I would like to see somebody try that in a movie sometime.
Yeah. Maybe this isn't the one for it, because as I said, those scenes are some of my favorite parts of this movie, but
and it would remove so much of the character we've talked so much about
as our
about
favorite.
The performance
as
that
our
we've
favorite.
Loved.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Were you happy to see the shaky cam? And have you talked to anyone that was less than happy about it?
Oh man, are we opening this door?
I think just for a bit. We'll close it really quick.
Okay. Yeah. No, I've got
this pirate cage. And...
Okay. Well, going with, you know.
One quick thing about Pirate Cage before I forget. So that scene when he's getting on the boat, Captain Phillips for the first time, and is kind of checking the security, and he sees that gates, the string or the rope isn't really pulling it closed, and it's not being an effective.
It's not locked.
Yeah, it's not being an effective pirate cage. I was like, oh, okay, so obviously this is going to play a part, and I can picture something like, you know, an hour and 45 minutes in where, you know, there's this thing and the only thing that saves him from this horrible situation is that he did the check before.
Yeah.
And then they just run up the steps and shoot the locks off.
Yeah.
I was so happy about that.
Yeah, I like that too. And maybe that's the comic relief of this movie is that one moment.
Yeah, if anything, it's that.
But I did also kind of like, because yeah, definitely. I mean, we're trained to think, I mean, it's like the voiceovers at the beginning of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, like, oh, we found out that tiny little detail. I bet that won't come back later, you know?
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. And I agree with you.
Yeah, and it was just cool to see something where, you know, these pirates are extremely powerful in a certain way. Like, you know, we have these little security systems and things like that, and they have AK-47s. And
yeah.
Even just in the, you know, the structure of a film, like, do you know the term Chekhov's gun?
I've definitely heard it.
Yeah, said, you know, if you show a gun in the first act, better be used by the third act. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, you know, just in script writing, you see a lot of it's, again, the small detail that comes up and plays a huge part later. And just the way that set up this expectation for me to have this scene in the conclusion of the movie be super powerful. No, like you can't plan. That's the thing about these pirates. Like they're so, you know, like scrappy and will just do, you know, whatever it takes and are unpredictable. And I thought to get that set up and knocked down in like 18 minutes, I thought was really, really interesting.
Yeah. Yes, I agree entirely. But going back to the cinematography, because again, you opened this pirate cage, it's all your fault.
That's fine.
It was pretty restrained for a Paul Greengrass movie. It's pretty restrained. And one of my few complaints about this movie was that I didn't go all out with the cinematography. And but that was when I watched it again. I was like, yeah, okay, it makes sense. Like they made all the right choices. It's still, you know, obviously all handheld, and they leave some of the edges in. Like one thing that I love Paul Greengrass for is that there's generally if you're editing something, you edit. You make a cut point before the camera starts to move, like before there's a camera move or after the camera move is finished, you know, and you see where it ends up. Paul Greengrass always cuts on the camera move, like right in the middle of it. And I love that. And I think it just adds this, like, and it's not a style that's easy to do. Like it seems like it should be easy. And as somebody that has attempted it, it is not easy at all. And it's just all of these, like, it's just such a flow thing that it's just so impossible to really, really figure out. And it's got to be all instinctual. And him and his editors have always been so good at this. And yeah, and his cinematographer, Barry Aykroyd, is well known for this type of cinematography. But there's a couple things in this movie I really liked. I think this is the first time Paul Greengrass has used digital cinematography. It's pretty obvious that the nighttime scenes are shot on digital just because how crisp they are and how low light they are. I thought all of that was really good looking, like the seals jumping out of the plane. How into that scene were you?
I was into it.
I was super into that scene.
Well, and I have like a couple just notes and kind of ideas I remember thinking while watching this movie. I'm not a big, like, pro-war guy. I'm not a big gun guy. I'm not a big Call of Duty guy. Like, I think that's, you know, I like history and kind of World War history and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. You're more interested in why they're firing the guns, not the guns being fired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, and it sucks when you hear about, sorry, this is a complete understatement, beyond sucks, but it's, you know, it's devastating when you hear about the American military going into countries and, you know, killing innocent people. And it sucks when you hear about, like, the budget of the United States of America being diverted from other social programs to have this insane defense budget. But fuck, is it fun to see those toys in action? Like, it's a horrible thing to say, and I know it. Yeah. But when the drone comes out and the parachute starts, and like, yeah, when you know it's like, oh, you're gonna take on the whole American Navy, you're gonna take on the American military, you and your two buddies, one of whom's like on his way to death from a horrible cut to his feet, and the other one's who's just insane, who's about to get shot in the head, and I know it.
Yeah.
It's fun, man. Like all the night vision, the snipers shooting three people at the same time who are on a boat, being shot by people also on a boat at night. Like, it's insane, and it's incredible. And as I said, in real life, I would, you know, not the way I'd want it to go. But yeah, it's kind of, it's as bad as it sounds. It's one of those reasons we go to the movies. Like, I was thinking about this and Gravity together, and it's just, they put you in these insane situations that I will never, ever experience or come close to, and that I never want to experience. But it's just, it's so fascinating to see it go down, and just at the highest level, you know, into such detail. It's so fascinating to see.
Yeah, and the thing that separates a movie like this from, and Gravity, from, you know, a lesser version of that type of movie where it's sort of all toys, you know, is that these movies offer us something to think about when we leave that isn't the weaponry and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's what sort of makes Captain Phillips a good movie instead of a cool movie, you know?
Yeah. And I know, and I feel bad, like, even just kind of saying that. And I thought a lot about whether or not I should even bring it up on the podcast because it sounds so callous and everything. But,
well, it's like you said, I mean, we go to the movies to see things that we wouldn't see in our real life, you know? I wouldn't want to watch a movie about a guy podcasting, you know? Like,
yeah.
It just, because I see that 2 times a week with my eyeballs. You know?
Yeah. At the same time, as I said, as I see those things in action, I'm not like, yeah, fuck that Somalian because he's not from America. Like, again, I have sympathy.
You whip out your electric guitar in the theater and just start shredding.
No, and like, I have sympathies for this character, and I had way more sympathy for Muse at the end of this film than I thought. Like, I thought about him in prison for 33 years, and I'm like, yeah, he deserves to be there. But in a way, I was like, imagine this guy in a new country, like, all he knew was his small village in Somalia, and then his asshole, like, bosses doing this shit, and then him getting in this terrible situation and being starved and, like, on this boat for days, and then he's in an American prison with a bunch of people who, you know, beat the shit out of him because he's a foreigner. Like, I have plenty of sympathy, and again, part of that comes from a really, really good performance by this you know, actor/non-actor, but it's just kind of those situations. And I thought that stuff was done really well from a filmmaking standpoint, not just like, yeah, now run over with a monster truck or something. Fuck yeah. Like, it was,
no, we're not talking about Roadhouse, James. Yeah,
not again. No, it was still just very interesting storytelling and a situation that I wouldn't be nearly as invested in without the emotional setup that this movie did.
Absolutely.
For the two preceding hours.
And I mean, if we're looking at the climax of this movie, when, you know, all three shots go green, when they stop the tow line, it's so, like, clever and a wonderful way to end your action scene. And I think, like, the build up to the idea that, they set it up probably 20 minutes before the execution of it actually happens, but that they need these three guys. They need a clear shot at all three of the pirates on the lifeboat before they can take one shot. And then, you know, it's going to come, and the way it's building and building and building. And then finally, like, that one little decision that the SEAL captain makes that sort of allows them to finally get three shots, and the way things are building in the lifeboat with Captain Phillips finally losing it and attacking one of the pirates. the way that all builds is just so expertly done. And I was so like physically invested in what was going on in a way that very rarely happens in movies. And I mean, we talked a lot about it on Gravity, and I think it's kind of, with Gravity, but I think it's kind of crazy that two movies that I've been like, had sort of like a physical attachment to, or sort of physical feelings from parts of these movies, that they've been released within 1 week of each other is amazing, because it maybe happens once every 3 years typically. But the end of Captain Phillips, when that SEAL commander says execute and then these three guys are just dead, is just such incredible filmmaking.
Yeah.
Like it's so incredible.
No, absolutely. And I remember kind of leaving this theater and I was, again, like I had that feeling, especially near the end of this movie, but even throughout, just on the boat as they're hiding in the engine room and stuff like that. And the whole standoff of when Muse is captured and then getting onto the lifeboat, like there were just moments that I was really, really invested in. And I was like, does this happen that much? Like, I know it just happened with Gravity, but like, is this something that, do they get me like this as often? And then kind of after the fact, looking back on it and thinking about other movies, I was like, no, this is just two movies that have done this pretty well in the last little bit. And again,
yeah, it'll be 5 years before one of these things happens again.
Yeah. And I didn't think that this was a fantastic movie, but it did some things very, very well. And getting me, actually physically invested, like my body was having reactions to this movie, which is a sign of great filmmaking. Like
just shitting your pants because
shit
the filmmaking
everywhere.
Was so good.
Actually, I had kind of a horrible experience seeing this movie, but
oh, okay. Well, we'll leave that to later.
No, not shitting my pants. Just the woman behind me kicked my seat a whole bunch, and
oh, that's brutal.
I turned around like 20 times, and should I get in the story now? I'll make it super
I guess you might as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
show us how you led your crew out of that situation.
So I'm trying to be like more assertive in my life, because like I'm just trying to, when shit's going wrong, I'm trying to like get it out there and have it be known.
Yeah.
And but I don't like to do that, because I hate being an asshole, because I hate assholes, right? So yeah. I was like, don't be that guy.
I'm gonna stop you right here. Here's the difference between me and you in a movie theater. I will tell them to stop kicking my chair immediately.
But they were like 60 years old, and so I was like, you know, maybe their bodies aren't completely under their control. So I gave a good like 10 turnarounds, like looking at them throughout this movie. And I was like, fuck it, I gotta say something. But it was just as this movie was really escalating. So I was like, I don't want to like yell over people or yell over the movie and then everyone else hears me and now I'm the asshole, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, whatever, I'll just wait till this movie's done and I'll fucking say something. And so literally probably got my seat kicked 100 times. And just terrible, like, again, this movie had me going. If I hadn't had that experience, like, I don't even know what would have happened, right?
Yeah.
And so movie's done, and I get up, and I turn around, and I go, and in my head, I'm like, I hope this person is an absolute bitch. Like, I hope this is the worst person alive, so I don't feel bad about this. So I go, hey, just so you know, you kicked my seat about 100 times during that movie.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. You really should have said something. I would have stopped. I was like, yeah, but, and in my head, I'm like, don't back down from this. I was like, yeah, but it's pretty inconsiderate. How do you not know you're kicking something? Like, you feel this every time, don't you? She's like, oh, hon, you know what? The funny thing is, they had a commercial before the movie about not kicking people's seats. I was like, yeah, I know. You should pay more attention to those commercials from now on.
Was she being a Susie seat kicker? Is that what you're saying?
It was a Cineplex theater. It was the Susie seat kicker commercial. And of course, she's just the nicest old lady in the world. And I wanted her to just spit in my face so I could clock her.
Anyway, getting back to Captain Phillips, because that was a very intriguing story.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I kind of wanted to talk about the ending of Captain Phillips again, because I feel like despite the fact that we've talked about it at length, we have not touched on everything that we need to touch on. I found it so interesting that in this movie, there are three instances, or at least three that I counted, where a character tells somebody that it's all going to be okay. No, that it's all going to be okay. We get this in the first scene where Catherine Keener, Captain Phillips' wife, is, you know, they're just sort of having this conversation. They're clearly worried about their kids. And she has her hand on Captain Phillips' the back of his neck. And it's like, it's all going to be okay, right? And Captain Phillips just says, yeah, it's going to be all right. And Musée, at one point on the lifeboat towards the end, says to himself in a very unconvincing way that it's all going to be okay. And then things go horribly wrong for him. And I feel like it's kind of important that he sounds really unconvincing when he says it. And everything goes wrong. And we finally see Captain Phillips kind of lose it and just sort of attack people or attack the pirates because the note he was writing to his family as shit was really getting real. As that note's taken away from him is when he attacks. I believe it's Bilal that he attacks. And the next time we hear somebody tell anybody that it's all going to be okay is the medic to Captain Phillips at the very end. And
things are actually going to be okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I'm almost certain it's the last line of the movie is her saying it's going to be okay a couple of times. And I think the way we sort of see Captain Phillips, who has been built up to be this sort of like this strong leader, we don't really get evidence that he's necessarily great at his job, but he's certainly dedicated to his job. And I think we could say he's good at his job, right? Like that he's willing, the character that we have presented to us, that he's willing to even get in the lifeboat, I think means that he's really dedicated to keeping his crew alive, right?
Yeah. And even just from a performance review aspect, he knows everything he needs to know about his job and is, you know, always saying, we're going to tighten security. We're going to do these drills. Like he, yes, absolutely. As a leader and a captain, he's very good at what he does from what we're being shown.
Exactly. And that's why it's kind of like important for him to actually kind of break eventually. And you know, he's very scared and he's, and at the end he's blindfolded, which is another key aspect during the last.
No, that's just, again, about this movie being like powerful when he gets shot and he's got the blood in his mouth and he's trying to remove the blindfold and stuff, like,
yeah,
that's incredibly tense few seconds there.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's just screaming, like, and it's a long take of him just sitting in this lifeboat blindfolded, screaming, yelling, has no idea what's happened, and he's basically brought back to like the base level of his humanity. Like he's just totally afraid. He's in no control. He's tied up. He can't see anything. He knows something horrible has happened, but he has no idea really the details of it. And I feel like it's really interesting that he gets reduced to this sort of just sort of pile of human emotion, you know? And I think, you know, it's very built up. There's reasons why this happens. He's just sort of finally broke. And I think it sort of says that, the movie says that at the core of all of us, like we're all kind of blind, at least in some situations. Like we have our expertise and whatever, but there's going to be moments where, you know, we're just not in control and we just kind of have to, like, we're going to be like blind and just piles of emotion. And we kind of just have to hope that the leaders in our lives are, you know, I mean, going back to Greengrass, tying us into the government, that we just sort of hope that they take us where we need to be, you know? And I think that's sort of why, like, I mean, just look at the movie. At the end of the day, we all want somebody to tell us that it's all going to be okay. And I thought that was really a really humanistic way to end this movie that I think offers so many interesting questions about leadership and also, you know, the fisherman stuff that we've talked about. And I think it was just sort of this really powerful humanistic way to end the movie. And that's why I kind of found this movie so moving and why I think it's a really great movie that I think I will still love in 10 years. And it just sort of, I don't know, I feel like it has this really strong connection to just sort of human emotion that I think very few movies have, you know?
Yeah. And on that note, like that, again, the thing I said, one of the things I love about that scene with the medic is it's just something we don't see, but in every big situation, like all these real life or, you know, whether it's an action drama movie, whatever, all these big situations have those few seconds of that we just don't see, like him still tied up between when those shots go off and when the SEALs arrive to rescue him. Like,
yeah,
there's so many movies we don't see that, but that is one of, like, that is, as you said, like, he gets just so reduced at that point. That, I'm guessing, would be one of the, like, that's got to be a feeling that would stick with you if you ever went through this situation, like, having a gun to your head, you know, being on this boat for days, all that stuff, you know, you're never going to forget. But that feeling of hearing loud bangs or hearing nothing at all, you know, depending on the situation, all this yelling, this screaming, this movement, all this stuff, and then nothing. Like, he's got blood in his mouth, but he hears no more talking. The ship stopped moving because the tow line thing that you love so much. Like, as I said with the Somali translation, there's sometimes there's nothing more terrifying than a lack of knowledge, and that's where he is in that moment. He does not know what's going on. He knows there's a lot of people invested in this, and there's a lot of people looking at this. He's not, you know, alone, but he is absolutely clueless. And for those few seconds to be that unaware of such a massive event happening around you has got to just be beyond terrifying, right?
Yeah.
And then
exactly.
And then the thing that another thing that I just hadn't heard in movies that kind of show similar situations was him thanking the nurse.
Yes, that was pretty great.
Yeah, and him just saying, like, you know, he asked if his family knows, and, you know, that's something we kind of expect. And then just being very grateful and, like, kind of thanking them. And as I said about those people in those positions, like those nurses and those doctors who are doing their job perfectly, but they're doing it in a way that seems kind of cold and seems like, you know, they should have better bedside manner or something. They're doing their jobs perfectly. And they are, you know, they're not there to coddle you or whatever, but they are checking your cognitive skills and your mental health and all these things.
Yeah.
Like, and for him to kind of be, you know, brought back into this place and to be cared for, and for him to be very thankful that there are people who are doing their jobs and that there's great leaders around him, and that this massive infrastructure of the American government and the Navy and the military is taking care of him in a way he never thought he'd ever had to be taken care of before in a very reductionary way is, as you said, like, so human. And he just has very basic needs that he wants to be cared for and healthy and, like, kind of coddled and all these things. And yeah, for a movie that I guess I was looking for a lot of kind of bigger political themes and maybe socioeconomic geopolitical themes, as we talked about before, more than anything. And I think Like Gravity brought everything home to this very basic level of human needs and human understandings. And as you said, if you're going to like this movie in 10 years, it's because it did something timeless and it addressed these very human emotions and needs and did it in an entertaining way. And maybe I'll forget someone parachuted. Maybe I'll forget that there was a, you know, a drone and this Mod Zero sniper rifle and this glow in the dark goggles and all these things. But for it to hit some of these fundamental basic human needs right on the head and do it in a very visceral, entertaining way is what makes a movie memorable at all. And maybe we got these very quickly, all things considered, between Gravity and Captain Phillips within a couple weeks. But again, that's kind of why we go to the movies. The fact that we get put in these situations and we get reminded of these very universal, grand, humanistic themes, that's the shit that will absolutely stick with you and is, I think, what you want to take away from a movie that's not Bad Grandpa.
Agreed. So thank you for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Again, be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com, for all our other content. And yeah, thank you again for listening.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.